I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to a Pixels Mini. I thought I wouldn't do a show this week. It's relatively quiet during the summer, usually in the gaming industry. But a couple of things happened that I figured I would record a quick solo episode before I'm off on vacation. And I say quick all the time when I do these solo shows. I think this one is actually going to be shorter than the regular episodes, but there is some interesting stuff to be discussed. And of course, one of the reasons I decided, F it, I'm going to do it anyway, is the announcement of the Nintendo Switch Lite that happened a couple of days ago, maybe yesterday. There are a few other tidbits I wanted to discuss. But the main topic, of course, is the Nintendo Switch Lite, which was rumored from, you know, months and months ago. And the rumor was Nintendo is working on two additional versions of the Switch, a smaller one, cheaper, and a better one, with air quotes, that would be the Pro. Of course, the Lite is the one that was announced. And they did mention, before we get into that, that this was going to be the only hardware that is coming this year, the only new hardware coming this year. So they essentially are saying that if there is a model to replace the current standard Switch, it won't be available until minimum next year, which makes sense. So what is the Switch Lite? I guess most of you have already heard. I'll go over the characteristics relatively quickly. It's, as the name suggests, a smaller, lighter version of the Nintendo Switch. And it is, to summarize, targeted at mobile gaming only. The big thing is that it cannot, absolutely can't, connect to a TV. That's the big difference with the regular standard Switch. And of course, that's where the Switch name comes from, which led to some super funny jokes by people on the internet. But live with it. It's the name of the console and the name of the system. And we are all okay with that. It's smaller. It's lighter. The screen is also smaller. It is releasing in November. I can't remember the exact date, but it's releasing in November. It's coming in three pretty terrible colors, I thought. I didn't really like them. And there's also Pokemon versions of the Switch, special versions of the Switch Lite, which makes a lot of sense because I think this is going to be a machine that is in significant part purchased by people who want to play Pokemon, the latest one, and people who already have a Switch and who want to play on their TV without the kids bothering them. And so they buy that new lighter Switch for their kids. I think there's going to be a lot of them that are sold like this, which solidifies kind of the idea that the Switch is, more than any other console, a device that households will have multiple units of. Just to finish on the details, a little bit more detailed if you want to have a clearer idea of what it's like. Weight-wise, it's about a third lighter, roughly a third lighter than the regular Switch, if we talk in grams, which is what civilized people do. It's 400 grams for the original one, 275 for this one. In screen size, unfortunately, we do have to revert to the Imperial system because that's how screen sizes work for some reason. 6.2 inches for the original one, 5.5 for the light version. So it does have a smaller screen, same resolution. So there's not going to be, unless something unexpected happens, not a significant difference in performance. The Joy-Cons, of course, are not detachable. There's no kickstand, and there is... that's it. There's, of course, no dock connector availability. The pad is a D-pad, the directional pad, better than the one on the Switch because, of course, you don't need to have the possibility of detaching it and using it as a full controller where the D-pad or the pad becomes the buttons. And there's no rumble. You can still connect additional controllers to the Switch Lite. So if you want to use the rumble or the IR tracker, things like that, it is possible. I don't think that's going to be a lot of... people are going to get a lot of use out of it. And to get an idea of how wide it is, it's roughly about the size of the original Switch main unit plus one Joy-Con. So it's one Joy-Con shorter than the original Switch. And that can give you an idea. It is smaller. It's still not a small console. Now, there are two things which I think are interesting. All of everything I've said until now was pretty obvious stuff, things that everyone has been talking about, and even more things that everyone expected. The two things that I think are really interesting are the fact that Nintendo is solidifying a move that they had made with the original Switch, which is they are merging their markets for home console and portable console. Now, that is pretty obvious because the Switch is portable and a home console, but now they kind of have the two versions that are one you can play on your TV and one you can only play moving around, which is a clear, not even indication, a clear manifestation of the fact that they have made those two markets and those two ecosystem one. And that's important for a number of things. The main one is that they are able to pull together their resources for development and they're putting those together, and they're able to create one set of games that will feed both of their traditional markets. So in the past, if you had, you know, the Wii or the Wii U and the DS or 3DS, if you wanted a Pokemon game, you needed to develop two Pokemon games. And I don't think that would necessarily mean you would sell twice as many. You would sell more than if you only made one, but it is. I don't think the development cost to sales increase would be proportionate. I might be wrong there, but what's certain is that now when they develop one game, they are feeding both the portable Switch Lite, quote-unquote, market, and the home-connected version. And that means they can make games that are... their attention is not divided, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at. Whether or not that's a good or a bad thing, I think most people would agree it's mostly good. There are some drawbacks, I suppose. Their combined market share or the combined revenue from those is probably going to be smaller for Nintendo than when they had, you know, it depends on which console, but when they had a home and portable console, even though it's difficult to compare because some of their home consoles were duds and some of them were immensely successful. And same with the portable market, although mostly successful in that area. It was more or less successful depending on the device, but it was usually successful. So that's interesting because it confirms, again, it's not like this is news, but it confirms that trend that Nintendo was going into, which is we're going to have one ecosystem now, and it's going to be what we dedicate ourselves to. So, really interesting move. I think it's going to, you don't have to be, you know, Nostradamus to predict that it's going to sell really well. It's going to, as I mentioned earlier, be a super popular console to buy with Pokemon. It's going to be a console that you buy for the little ones. I can't remember if I mentioned the price, but it's 100 euros or dollars cheaper than the original Switch, around 200 bucks. You can already imagine there are going to be some promotions at some point. I don't think this year, but next year, you know, a year from now, it's probably going to be 150 bucks, I suppose. And if you include, you know, promotions or added software with the console bundles, that's what they're called. And that is going to be a complete steal. Now, which one should you get if you don't already have one? Personally, I'm guessing I'm talking to people who have who are, you know, avid gamers who would be interested in playing on their TVs. I would still recommend the full Switch. But unless you specifically know that you want the portable one only, I'm guessing that the full Switch is probably the way to go. I think the portable one is for younger audiences or people who really, like someone who doesn't even have a TV, only has a computer and watches all of their stuff on computers. Maybe that's someone who would consider it, but I still think the full Switch is a better option for most people, or at least for most core gamers. But it's a great way of dividing the market. And the fact that the original Switch can be connected to the TV kind of enables them to segment their market very cleverly. I'm guessing it wouldn't have cost a huge amount of money to, you know, enable the Switch Lite to have the internals to connect to the TV. Maybe it would have needed to be a little bit more powerful to render in 1080p when it does on the TV and stuff like that. So it would have cost a little bit more maybe, but not a huge amount more. You know, you wouldn't have had a dock, you would have needed a cable, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that it can do it means that if you want the real Switch experience, you need to shell out a little bit more money. And as we know, Nintendo is one of the few of those companies that makes money on every system they sell. I believe that is still the case for the Switch, and I'm guessing for the Switch Lite. They don't sell systems at a loss, unlike what their competitors do, at least when the machines first launch. So that is an interesting aspect of it. The other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that this, again, solidifies a trend that we have, that we are seeing coming, that isn't quite here yet. The fact that the trend of playing the same games on large screens and small screens. And that is definitely going to be the case with streaming. It might not happen, as I've mentioned a few times in the past, it might not happen and not for everyone in the next year or two, but within a few years, it's probably going to be an option. And the fact that Nintendo is also going that route without streaming, but with large and small screens, it might sound dumb, but you need to be able to play the games on small screens as well. And that means fiddling with, at the minimum, the text and sometimes the UI, and maybe having baked into the development process the ability to adapt to the screen size you're using. And that is obviously not the case at the moment because most people use relatively large screens. There might be some fiddling with the text size, but in the next few years, I think developers and I'm guessing middleware are going to integrate the ability to adapt to those screen sizes. Because of course, if you're playing a game that is developed for a large TV and you put it on a tiny phone size screen, chances are there are a lot of elements that you're not going to be able to see or read. So that is something that I think had been coming already because of streaming and the idea of playing with your phones. But now that it essentially puts everyone on that same level in that respect, and every game is going to have to contend with that quote-unquote issue, or at least find a way to manage that aspect. I am tired indeed. So, yeah, that's my takeaway from the Nintendo Switch Lite announcement. It's a really exciting development for the Switch. It's really, as I'm always saying, it's really heartwarming to see Nintendo doing so well. And I hope that we see a Nintendo Switch Pro or Super or something next year. I don't even know why I would want one, maybe so my games run better, but there's one other thing. Some games, of course, are not going to be playable on the Switch Lite because they are only playable on a TV. That's not as huge a deal as some people are saying. It was already the case. Some games were playable portable only, and some games were playable TV only. Portable is, of course, the ones that require a touchscreen. And that's not a huge deal. I don't think a Switch Pro will go the route of the new 3DS with some games that are playable only on that new version of the hardware. I think that that was an attempt that didn't pay out for Nintendo, and they wouldn't do that. But they might beef up the hardware a little bit, maybe integrate a version of the Tegra chip that is updated, and that enables them to ensure better, smoother, frames per second, and maybe even higher resolution on some games, so all of them can be rendered in 1080p, that kind of thing. Other than that, I would like to see a Pro that is lighter or smaller than the current one, but still has the same, at least the same capabilities. So, because the Switch, let's be honest, it is a little bit bulky. And if we have a Switch Lite-sized Switch Pro, which can do all the things that the current Switch can, that would be pretty sweet. Pretty sweet. I'm so dumb sometimes. All right. I think that slip of the tongue will make for an excellent end to that segment. The few other things I wanted to talk about are NVIDIA has announced a new GeForce RTX cards, the Supers. Maybe that's why I thought about a Switch Super name. And they're better than the ones. They're essentially matching one-upping AMD with their cards. I think the issue there is that the big selling point of those RTX cards is still the ray tracing aspect of them, and I don't think we're there yet for ray tracing, and because there aren't enough games that use them, and those that do are not developed with ray tracing from the get-go, at least yet. And I think we're still a couple of years away from it being a common thing. And it will be because, of course, the two next generation consoles do have ray tracing capabilities baked in. So it is coming, and the platforms will be similar enough in that respect that everyone or a lot of people will integrate it. But by the time it is, new cards will have come out, and they will be more capable for cheaper, which is something you can always say about hardware, especially on PCs. But in this case, I think this is one example of a moment where it does make sense to wait, because even if you do buy one, you don't really have anything to play them on yet. You're going to be searching for that one game that has it and maybe buy it just for that and try it out. And so it in this case, usually I would say waiting doesn't really make sense because there's always something else to wait for. In this case, I think it does make sense because these are not I mean, if you just want the more powerful card, then sure, go ahead and be happy. But I am running a 970, and honestly, it's still running pretty well. I only play 1080, usually 60 FPS. So I guess if you want to play like a real gamer and you have a higher resolution, or you want better refresh rates on your high-end monitor, then of course these might be interesting. But for most people, I would recommend waiting a little bit. A couple of game previews that I was excited about. Unexpectedly, Modern Warfare showcased Modern Warfare is the next version of Call of Duty coming out this fall. And they have a new mode, PvP mode, which seems pretty fun. It's gunfight, where it's essentially 2v2 on very small maps. And there was a short video that showcased the mode. It's a interesting take on these aspects. 2v2 is always, I think, these kinds of small numbers for PvP is always fun, because you have a certain mastery of your environment. You grab a friend, you start playing this. Of course, if you get match made, I think it's going to be as frustrating as anything else, but you can grab a friend and go in that and rely on your skill and your skill alone. So it's a kind of a happy medium between fighting games, usually, which are really yourself and you're playing alone. It's 1v1, so you can only blame yourself. And your games that are team-based, like MOBAs or FPSs, where you have a whole team that you can blame if you are not performing. And that is, always frustrating. So this gunfight thing, of course, it's not going to make or break the game, but I think it's an interesting approach to a new look at PvP in FPSs. The other game I wanted to mention was Control, the game by Remedy that is coming out towards the end of the summer, I believe, maybe end of August, I think. And they put out a video of the first 13 minutes of the game, which I stopped watching after like 4 minutes, because I was completely enthralled in the way they were telling their story. And I didn't want to spoil it for myself, which is kind of dumb, because I didn't see a single second of gameplay. And that's where, of course, what the games rely on, that's what makes or breaks games, it's gameplay. But I don't know, that made me way more interested in Control than I have ever been. And I'm curious to see where it's going, because, of course, gameplay is the most important factor, but an average gameplay can be carried by a well-designed atmosphere and storytelling. And I think that is what those first few minutes of the game showed me. So I'm very much interested now. So we'll see what happens towards the end of summer. If the reviews are acceptable, I might plunge where I wouldn't have before I saw that video. Other tidbits, the CD Projekt Red has kind of hinted, or it was hinted that they had other projects based on Cyberpunk. And that was they wouldn't confirm or deny what was hinted at or understood as them having other projects based on that IP. Of course, Cyberpunk 2077 is coming out next year, and everyone's super excited about it. It could make sense that they would have other games based on that IP. I didn't really think about it before, but it could be an interesting way of capitalizing on that IP, first of all, and the way the game and its success will bring it back to the forefront. So we might see other things coming out of the team, or, you know, of not necessarily that or those, because there's more than one dev team working on that game, but from other teams in at the developer. And it might even be in the same universe. So that would be interesting. Games as a service that seem to never die, at the forefront of them is Warframe. TennoCon, which is their convention, their fan convention, was this week? Last week? This week? Maybe last week. Or last weekend. And it was really interesting. They're doing some interesting things with that game, with the Empyrean update in particular, where they're adding essentially a crewed ship that you can play things in together with your team or friends, and you can get out of the ship and go into on planets and go back in the ship and do stuff, support your team that is on the planet from the ship with you know, cannons and ballistics and stuff like that. It looks really interesting. They are also revamping the new player experience, which is necessary, I think. That game has content, like 5 or 6 years of content, and it needs to be a little bit more friendly. I played it for a couple dozen hours, and I still felt like I didn't really understand what was happening. But it's, you know, it's a really interesting, well-made game still, and always want, it's one of those games that I want to play more of and dive back into with every one of those updates. I think I'll wait until the fall and see what they do with their revamped first player, you know, new player experience, and maybe give it another try. At the same time, I'm back into Destiny with the latest season from the annual pass, which I bought last season after a little bit of hesitation, and I am so in love with that game. I realized I have been playing Destiny since it came out, 2014, you know, more or less actively, but there are very few games that have kept me for that long. Off the top of my head, it's of course World of Warcraft, and maybe if those can be considered one game, the Street Fighter and fighting game series. But even then, I don't think I played them at least like once a quarter. I'm talking about the fighting games, once a quarter for 5 years, or maybe I did. I guess Street Fighter 2 came out in 92, and I remember still playing fighting games when I was in Japan in 2002 and beyond that. So it was a long time. But yeah, Destiny has become part of the tapestry of my life, I guess, and still incredible. I feel like I would want to talk about this game more, and maybe for the expansion, I will dive into it and do another Destiny special at some point, because I really have an emotional attachment to that game like I have with very few others, and the way they have worked on it and improved it and then bungled it and then improved it again is kind of endearing, and I can't wait to see what they do with the way they've been going this year, because I don't think I've mentioned this quite in that way, but the way the annual pass works with Destiny 2 is that you pay for, you know, 30, 40 bucks, I can't remember, for the annual pass, and they don't give you like expansions with story and then missions and then something that happens at the end. They focus on the end game of what would be an expansion. And famously, the expansions for Destiny 2, you know, small expansions that they do multiple times a year, they weren't good. This annual pass thing is super good because they focus on that kind of new activity that they deliver for that season. And everything they do for that content update is centered on that activity. And The last season, it was a new Gambit mode with an added activity. This season, it's the Menagerie, which is... Gambit mode is a PvEvP element to the game. This season is the Menagerie, which is essentially Raid Lite. It's a match-made version of easy mechanics for a raid, which are really fun. There are other elements I won't bore you with, but really... compelling stuff, and it gives you so much to do, which is, I always say, you know, the only thing you do in Destiny is shoot aliens in the face, and that's still true, so it's not like Destiny has transformed into something different, but they're embracing that aspect of it and giving you so many reasons and so much fun for that aspect of the game, which is the only one that matters, and giving you pursuits and quests to get special guns that all seem like you want them. And it's just a brilliant way of thinking about games as a service and serving the core of your community, which they can enjoy very, very much. So... yeah, I could talk about Destiny for a long time. I won't, but I'm very much into it. And I suspect that during my vacation, I'm going to play a lot of it. Although, I'm also going to try other stuff. Like, maybe I'm going to play Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. It's possible. Not going to have a lot to do, hopefully. So, we'll see what happens there. Finally, what was the final thing? Oh, Shadow of War is coming to the Xbox Game Pass in July. You should play that game. It is amazing. I love it. I've said it on this show before, but you might have a negative image of it on because of what happened when it's launched. It is a game definitely worth playing if you like those Arkham style arcade, easy to get into, fun open world type games. Shadow of War in the universe of Middle Earth with actual connections to the Lord of Rings books, but well done enough that it stays separate. It's just a great game. So Shadow of War, if you have Xbox Game Pass, as I'm sure many of you do now that it transformed into the Ultimate, give it a try if you haven't. Stranger Things is in Fortnite, showing once again that Fortnite is a vehicle for advertising stronger than many others. And there are two things that I wanted to mention in related media. Cuphead is getting an animated series on Netflix. It's kind of an obvious transition, but at the same time, I wonder what it's going to be like as an animated series, because is it going to be fun? Is it going to be for adults? Is it going to be, I don't know. It's probably going to be for adults, but I don't know if I want to actually watch an animated series in the style of Cuphead. I don't know. They would need to do something kind of special for it to attract my attention, but we'll see. And more importantly, there's a new Mortal Kombat movie, which that is super exciting. Of course, Mortal Kombat, the movie, was really bad, but really good because it was so bad. And they're in the process of making a new Mortal Kombat movie, which is, again, super exciting. I can't wait to see what they do, because nowadays I think they have enough understanding of what the game is and how it could translate to the big screen. I wonder if they will make it as grisly as the games have become. I'm very curious about this, but very excited as well. And that's going to be it for this episode of Pixels. Thank you so much for listening. You will not hear from me for a few weeks. We will be back with Gamescom, which will be very exciting, I'm sure. And until then, you can follow me on social media. Twitter is not Patrick. Facebook is not Patrick. Instagram. Go follow me on Instagram. You might see some pretty cool pictures. I'm not Patrick on there as well. I hope you have a wonderful vacation if you're on vacation, a wonderful summer or winter, depending on where you live. And I will talk to you in a few weeks. Bye.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.